allá de todos los sueños.
We have started the global contingency of COVID-19 and we presented it to the market in the last call. I just wanted to start by making a follow-up around the advancements of this situation in order to follow up and look at the impact of this action plan that we have in our operational plans for the group and for the companies that are related to us. So to begin, I want to thank more than 14,000 collaborators that are part of our organization. Despite the challenges that we have been facing, this team has found a great adaptation capacity, commitment, transcendency, and this has allowed us to execute successfully the strategy that we have established in order to face this difficult situation. Today is more important than ever. Our culture that makes us an aligned company, aligned with this main goal, we're transforming the people, the life of people through the operations in all the countries where we are present as an organization. A culture that gives us tools to strengthen and face the challenges coming from such a challenging situation that we face nowadays, full of uncertainty, and this gives us the strength and the preparation to feel proud, optimistic in terms of overcoming this situation. People are and will be our priority. Because of this, we started this robust plan around health, life, and well-being with a weekly follow-up by the main talent leaders of our companies. This has allowed us to perform a close follow-up to the physical and emotional health of each one of our collaborators. As part of this plan, it's worth to mention the development of an internal application for a daily monitoring of health that allowed us to identify and support with professionals of the medical industry to each one of these persons that are in organization in 18 different countries. Right now, 30% of Grupo Empresarial Argos is working from their houses, and 70% are working physically in the operation. From that population, 100% of the holding collaborators is working from home, which has represented an additional challenge in terms of adaptation to these types of labor, accelerating digital transformation and the flexibilization of our labor schemes. In addition, in adapting all the biosecurity protocols, we have carried out necessary actions within our workplaces in order to guarantee safe conditions and be prepared to operate or coming back to them in the righteous time. As you can see, we've taken all the necessary precautions to care for the health of our collaborators with rigorous protocols, with specialized follow-ups, with epidemiological close-ups and all of the preventive measures which has led to present very fruitful numbers. Till the moment we have 108 active cases that represent less than 0.008% of the population that's part of our operations in our geographies, and we have done more than 3,350 tests. That is equal to test 24% of our total collaborators. Nevertheless, we are aware that we're facing the most challenging days, which leads us to reinforce controls and measures in order to avoid more sick people. We have also been able to keep the employment of our 14,000 collaborators as one of our priorities in order to face the situation. We are absolutely aware that as relevant actors of employment generation within the regions we operate, we also have the responsibility of avoiding those incremental effects that this sanitary emergency is placing upon the families and the economy. In June, the number would be around 20%, according to the most recent figures published by Dani. With the same purpose, we are still committed with the sustainability of our value chain, implementing measures such as anticipated payment to our vendors during this situation, and the support in the structuring of schemes that allow them to have efficient discounts over their invoices. In terms of corporate citizenship, we have ratified our commitment with society. To the moment, this business group has contributed more than 20 billion Colombian pesos, where 76% of that figure has been dedicated to strengthening the attention capacity of the health system in Colombia, and 24% of it focused on the most vulnerable families with food supports or food aid. Aware of this challenge, the situation rings upon our leaders, Grupo Argos has participated actively in the construction of the debate and independent think tanks in order to contribute with ideas that can strengthen the construction of public policies that will allow a fast economic reactivation and can sponsor the reestablishment of adequate levels of employment in our city. The situation invites us to reflect upon the changes that we need to implement to save society, promoted from the productive sector and from the needs of the companies, for them to be aware of the humanistic side and their surroundings, the values that citizens expect from them, the links between businesses and principles, social solidarity, and empathetic. This vision will reinforce the role of the company as a relevant actor in society that, by definition, is called upon to become a generating entity, not just economic value generation, but also development generation, as well as social well-being. I'll just speak a little bit about our contingency plan for our businesses. The priorities that we defined in an anticipated manner at the beginning of March allowed us to record financial results that exceed the expectations that we had initially set, even in a month such as this one that's completely affected by the impact of COVID-19. Rather than the first quarter, only just some days of March were influenced by the closes of operations in our markets. We also want to highlight that despite the dramatic reduction that we've had in these sections, we've been able to prove resiliency, while the diversification of sectors, currencies, and regions ratifies the relevance of the strategy that we have followed in this organization. The opportunity in decision-making allowed to ensure the liquidity of the company through cost and expense reduction plans, also ensuring necessary cash decision to operate and to mitigate the impact, and enables us to keep a solid and flexible financial position. We also want to highlight the role of Grupo Argos as a strategic articulator of an articulated work of all its companies, offering powerful synergies that add value and maintain a long-term vision. Thanks to this joint effort and articulated effort with our businesses, in the last months, we managed close to 500 billion Colombian pesos of additional resources coming from higher efficiencies that have been identified in terms of OPEX, CAPEX, or DEVEX. Besides the credits to offer the right liquidity to these companies. In this situation, we went from 2.3 trillion Colombian pesos to 2.8 trillion Colombian pesos, strengthening the financial flexibility. In respect with CAPEX, up to the moment, we have delayed investments close to 868 billion Colombian pesos, 148 billion Colombian pesos, additional to the ones that we announced in our last call. In the same way, with the OPEX, we've set saving goals close to 508 billion Colombian pesos. So this is 166 billion Colombian pesos more than the initial budget. With this, we have reached savings, real savings, that reached 367 billion Colombian pesos. That's close to 70% of the goal that we had initially set. I want to also highlight the effort and commitment of all the operations that have been able to significantly reduce costs and expenses that, as we'll see further on when we go over the quarter results, has been key in order to offer these figures that you'll be seeing today. Even with the impact in the first line by a lower generalized demand over the operations, we were able to variabilize the expense and cost structure. This is a milestone that I want to highlight, because for a company such as ours, we were able to achieve this goal in an agile and efficient manner. The decision that we took before lockdown, ensuring liquidity in order to guarantee the continuity of our businesses, has allowed us to count with the necessary resources in order to attend this contingency. It is very important to emphasize that these resources have been treated with the most carefulness and rigorosity, and that the cash generation of the businesses has been enough to guarantee the operations. Because of this, our cash position right now is higher than what we had last week of March. This is even making a consolidated figure of 1.9 trillion Colombian pesos. As a sample of the capacity of our cash generation our business has, Cementos Argos had a free cash flow of 232 billion Colombian pesos, Celsia 42 billion Colombian pesos, and Odinsa 79 billion Colombian pesos. As you can see, we count with the necessary flexibility and tools in order to face this contingency. Even though we expect that in the measure that we have a better visibility, we will be able to reduce those liquidity credits that we have taken in order to come back to cash positions that are more fit into our long-term vision. Even though the resources to guarantee this liquidity have meant larger levels of leveraging, it's important to note that eliminating this contingent excesses in cash, the debt, net debt has been stable. And besides that, we have also been working in order to optimize the expiry profiles with debt renegotiation, both short and long term, which shows the trust that the financial sector has in our company. We have also been working in long term financing alternatives, looking for innovative structures that we have been working on in order to improve these levels. With these initiatives, we want to open the path in order for other companies to adopt strategies in order to improve their debt profiles. With this alternative of what we call here in Congo, but it has never been done privately. We have advanced in the structuring of this with the Colombian Stock Exchange. We have the authorization of the financial superintendency, and we are waiting to find the right window in order to advance in this forth. We also want to strengthen our credit strategy, proving that we are active players in the capital market, where only in 2019, we mobilized resources for 5.3 trillion Colombian pesos in emissions and financial operations and placements too. We also count and thank the support of investors, and we'll keep on looking alternatives with instruments that will allow us to strengthen our capital structure of our businesses in order to face this current situation. Now let me move on to speak about the financial results. As I mentioned before, financial numbers exceeded the expectations that we had forecasted at the beginning of the situation, in part because of the implementation of a timely and shock plan that I had previously mentioned, and the commitment that has been assumed by each one of our collaborators in terms of this challenge. We fastly adjusted the operations to the new reality that this situation brought forth. If the second quarter was developed through this COVID lockdowns, it's also important to mention that month after month, we have been observing a positive trend, where in June we presented the same results, even slightly higher than the ones we had in 2019. The signal fills us with optimism towards the future. Consolidated results found on slide eight. You'll be able to see how could we evidence the efforts done by each one of the businesses. Revenue for the first quarter are close to 3.3 trillion Colombian pesos, with a drop of 15% compared with the same period last year, exceeding the expectations that we had forecasted during March. If we look at this in detail, we could see a pronounced drop in April of 22%, month in which lockdowns all around the economies were much more strict. In change, in June, the variation was just a 9% if it's compared with the same month last year, 2019. This result has been supported by a better performance, mainly in the energy, cement business, and urban development business. It's also important to highlight the consolidated EBITDA that's close to 890 billion Colombian pesos that shows a similar behavior to the revenue, which evidences the capacity that this company has, or this organization has, to adapt to these external shocks, verbalizing the cost and expenses. This is to making this typical structure of fixed cost. Consolidated level expenses dropped to 14%, and we can only see increases in energy, in the energy business, and this is explained portfolio after the incorporation of the distribution and transmission business in Tolima, that obviously is labor intensive and it was not scoped before. It's also important to mention the reduction of Cementos Argos in terms of expenses, and that was 23% in Colombian pesos this quarter, considering also that more than 70% of the company's expenses are in U.S. dollars. In this period, there was a devaluation of 17% when we compare both. This reduction represents a very important effort. Bearing in mind that we were able to effectively manage this adjustment, the EBITDA margin at a consolidated level was kept the same for the same period last year, and it's 27%. This is without doubt a significant achievement that proves the adaptation and transformation capacity that we have as Grupo Empresarial Argos, and the efficient functioning and powerful functioning of our risk strategy, besides the commitment that we have with our organization in keeping the value generation for all our groups of interest. This also becomes a strength and a leverage of value towards the future once this operation are stabilized. Financial expense was 345 billion Colombian pesos, even with a higher indebtedness at a consolidated level that closed in 18.5 trillion Colombian pesos. This is a figure follows the liquidity strategy that the organization adopted in order to face the situation that I have previously mentioned. I also want to mention that the variation in the debt stock was impacted by the exchange rate that increased the difference between in 1.3 trillion Colombian pesos, while the debt stock reduced in more than 540 billion Colombian pesos. If we adjust the debt by the excess cash that our companies have today as a policy for facing the situation, net debt would be 16.6 trillion Colombian pesos, ratifying our commitment in face of that of reducing leverage of the companies. This is a strategy that we have been executing in an accelerated manner and that will be increased in the moment that I have previously mentioned when we have a better visibility of the future. Revenue before interest closed in 97 trillion Colombian pesos and 62 trillion Colombian pesos as net profit. Also, bearing in mind portfolio investments that are registered via the participation method. In this line, we registered a drop of 29% in the revenues, close to 29 trillion Colombian pesos compared with the same quarter last year, when not having an associated expense has a more pronounced impact in the net profit. This result has obviously accounting implications, but nevertheless, it doesn't imply effects over the cash. The net profit for the controller was 10 billion Colombian pesos for the quarter, with a negative variation that reflects the impact of the operation for concessions, the company that has been affected the most by the situation and which Grupo Argos owns almost the majority or almost all these all the stocks. We'll be speaking later on about this, not just in reading results, but also in our Q&A session, speaking about the concession business. In terms of separated results, revenues reached 28 billion Colombian pesos that are broken down in 46 billion from the real estate business and 18 negative million from the participation method. This result collects the contribution of the different businesses to cement, energy, and urban development and evidence the challenges that we are facing in the concession business, which results reflect the difficult situation that airports are going through because of the operational lockdown that has been ordered by the government, especially in the case of Opaín, that concessions El Dorado Airport. In the case of the urban development business, we reached a very important achievement with signing two session contracts that are part of the partial plan of the business that's being structured in Puerto Colombia that allowed us to have revenues for 25 billion Colombian pesos. At this point, I'd like to drill deeper because these types of projects and initiatives reflect the organizational purpose that Grupo Argos has and makes us feel proud and optimistic, not just because of the team's capacity of seeking for new opportunities in the portfolio in order to optimize the value of the assets we have, but because this model also represents in terms of social impact and measure that multiple market niches grow in a city such as Barranquilla. The partial plan that we have called Rivera de Mallorquín that we have been working on Puerto Colombia is one of the most innovative urban developments of the country, and it's concentrated in attending the social interest housing for that city with a sustainable orientation, with an inclusive orientation, and with the highest quality standards in terms of urbanism, urban planning, architecture, and access to public mobility that increase or are over the national reference that we have in Colombia. And this will be an iconic project, not just for the region, but for Colombia. If our management had been focused on housing for social, for middle social status and high social status is, this that we're proposing will be also subject to the bordering lot that we have next. This could have been taken decades, but that's why we're working on developing values. The first phase will have total revenues of around 123 billion Colombian pesos with an EBITDA close to 74 trillion Colombian pesos during the billion Colombian pesos. During the second trimester, we were able to close two transactions that led to a higher value that we have reached in these businesses through valuation. In July, we perfected the third operation that will be reflected in the third quarter results. We hope to close the last two this year. This project proves the capacity of capturing value for our shareholders, as well as we materialize our commitment with society, creating projects that will allow social inclusion and well-being generation for the community. In this point, and taking advantage of the figures that we have presented, I want to invite you all to learn about the details of the real estate development business of Grupo Argos and the strategy that we have around value maximization. We will be having a video conference next 20th of August. This is a space for us to drill deeper in the composition of our portfolio and the financial and contractual methods that we are developing in the real estate business, because we keep seeing a significant gap between the value of our stock and the fundamental value of the company, because we believe that facilitating the understanding, even facilitating tools that will allow to have a better value approximation to those non-listed assets of this organization. We hope that this might be of your interest, and we want to invite you all to have an active participation in this event. Coming back to result presentation, Grupo Argos dropped 13% their controllable expenses through the adjustment of cost structure aligned with the effort done sustainably during the last 4 years. Given to the impact of the close downs of the airports and the significant effects this has had over the participation method, net profit for the quarter closed with a loss of 56 billion Colombian pesos. In respect with capital structure, we closed this quarter with a debt of 1.7 trillion Colombian pesos. That represents an increase of 17%, and it's explained by the shock plan in order to strengthen liquidity in the short term. At the same time, we closed with a cash position of 117 billion Colombian pesos. It's a typical high figure for this company in the last years, which allows us to ensure our operations at least for the upcoming year. Our strong liquidity position and the righteous and solid financial management has allowed us to keep the trust of local and international banking, as well as the institutional investors, as well as risk raters. Today, Grupo Argos has a AAA rating by Fitch Ratings and AA+ by Standards and Poor's. This fact we recognize as part of a transparency policy, a transparency, coherence, and disclosure policy that we have in terms of our results. Now, let me move on, make some comments about different businesses within our organization. Let me start by the cement business. I want to emphasize in the concession business later on in Odensa, because if some of the cement's results and cement results have been shared previously, but I also believe that it's very important for us to discuss the real estate business and the concession business. These are two non-listed businesses of the group. Our cement business proved its resiliency capacity in this border. Almost all operations were affected by COVID-19, even though the volumes registered a drop of 23%. Revenue dropped 17%, and EBITDA had a negative variation of 13%, with the cost structure where more than 70% is in dollars, and the devaluation for these two quarters is equal to 17%. This result evidences the huge effort done in order to adjust the cost and expense structure, where we achieved total savings close to $71 million from those $94 million that we had identified in the savings plans that we had for this year. This has been an agile and effective transformation that has allowed us to mitigate the dramatic impact of a lower demand coming from this situation. And the quarter results are significant, especially in the United States, region in which, even with a volume 6% lower, we registered an increase in EBITDA of 2%, adjusted by those disinvested assets in 2019. I remember that last quarter, 2019, there were some assets that were disinvested, more specifically in concrete, in the southeast of the United States. Our capacity to obtain this good results in the middle of these contingencies is a proof of the adaptation capacity, and it's more evident when we analyze the performance of the business month after month, where we see a positive trend. I also want to highlight that June has been one of the best months in the recent history of this company. We have EBITDA close to 180 billion Colombian pesos, which is the highest of recent time, but 3% higher than same month last year, where we had operations that were going in full sail. We also want to highlight the results in Central America, with sales of 487,000 tons. They grew 14% compared with the same period 2019, and with an EBITDA for June of $13 million, which implies a growth of 20% year after year. At the same time, Colombia continues showing a recovery trend with an EBITDA that's growing 14% for the month, reaching 41 billion Colombian pesos. Financial expenses for the quarter dropped in 2%, growing from the highest debt stock came from the shock plan. In this line, we want to highlight the cash position with which the quarter closed, that reached 965 billion Colombian pesos, 30% higher than the first quarter this year, which obeys to the cash generation of the operation, which reached 232 billion Colombian pesos. In addition, company achieved a negotiation with many creditors in order to flexibilize the indicators up to December 2021 for the covenant calculations, which has this new limit, 6.5 times net debt EBITDA for December this year, and it's adjusted gradually, reaching up 4 times in December 2021. This extension proves the trust that financial institutions have in front of the capacity that the company has in terms of complying with its obligation. We have the conviction that in the measure that we reduce the leveraging through the disinvestment initiatives over which we've been working on, we'll have the capacity of activating a significant lever in order to generate value. Let me move on to the energy business. The Celsius results prove the power of the strategic route that started in materializing a bit more than a year. Results include today stable components such as the energy distribution that contributes with 59% of the revenues in second quarter this year, while generation contributed with 41%, for a total revenue of 891 billion Colombian pesos. The energy generation for the quarter dropped, given the low hydrology, which generated an increase in the value of the kilowatt hour, compensating the effects of the situation over the demand. Collection has proven a good performance, and at the same time, we're receiving payments of the subsidies within the plant times, allowing Celsia to keep a cash generation, a healthy cash generation in the middle of the situation. This company has proven to be highly resilient, maintaining its operation and advancing the implementation of the new operational system called Nova, that within other benefits will allow the company to manage its transmission operation in a much more efficient manner, as well as distribution in a remote manner. The EBITDA for this quarter closed in 312 billion Colombian pesos, a 9% higher compared with the same period last year. And this is a figure over which the Tolima operation contributed positively with 44 billion Colombian pesos. The EBITDA margin, consolidated EBITDA margin for the period, reached 35%. The simplification strategy for the society structure, together with the advancements in terms of asset rotation, has translated into a higher controlling net profit that reached 73 billion Colombian pesos, multiplying more than three times this result compared with second quarter last year. This is a milestone that comes from the strategy that we have been implementing to optimize and maximize the value of our energy business. For June 2020, Celsia closed with a cash of 566 billion Colombian pesos. Debt stock closed in 4.4 trillion Colombian pesos, with an impact for the exchange rate devaluation for 667 billion Colombian pesos. If the company keeps healthy and leveraging business, leveraging indicators in like 3.07 times net EBITDA, it has a comfortable cash position that will be used to reduce the leveraging that will be possibly under these levels, substantially under these levels, and the measure that we have a higher visibility over the future. I also want to mention that in August, some debt advancements will be done around this situation. In Odensa, the rural concession businesses contrast with the evident challenges that the mandatory lockdowns of airports bring. But we want to highlight that since the contingency has been decreed and the lockdown has started in the country, we have started working in shop plans for each concession for Odensa, looking to guarantee the liquidity and optimizing the operations, and at the same time promote the necessary biosecurity measures in order to safeguard the health of all of our users and collaborators. Thanks to a timely reaction, Odensa has been able to leverage these effects, given that different productive phases, and we also have a geography diversification, and where there's no traffic risk, given the different contract mechanisms that allows us to have this guaranteed revenues. The confirmation of this portfolio allowed us to close a quarter close to 151 billion Colombian pesos, where we could see growth in road concessions of a 24% and in construction of 8%, despite the closes and the operation reduction that we had during April, May, and June. Nevertheless, these results were impacted by a lower participation method from the airport concessions, product, of course, of that lockdown that closed on two airports. EBITDA closed in 92 billion Colombian pesos for the second quarter, with a negative variation of 31%. As an effect as a lower contribution of the airports to the participation method for at least 93 billion Colombian pesos. It's also important to clarify that this negative effect has the same impact in the revenue and EBITDA lines, given that it comes from the participation method, because the variation in this last one is asymmetrically larger. We also found a better performance in terms of EBITDA margin for the road and construction segments, which reinsures the commitment that the Odinsa teams has around cost and expense reduction in order to mitigate the impact of this situation. The consolidated financial debt of the company closed the second quarter in 2.8 trillion. It's an increase in respect to the same period last year of 17%, mainly generated by the devaluation and the consolidation of the net of the debt for the station Tunnel de Aguas Oriente that has been incorporated this year, eliminating the accountable effect for the consolidation of this debt for this concession. The effect of the devaluation in this case would have a variation of 11% year after year. This means that this would be less than 270 billion Colombian pesos. The optimization strategy for the debt has been reflected in the reduction of cost in dollars and in pesos that represent 170 and 30 basic points respectively compared with the same period last year. In terms of separated debt, the balance in the second quarter this year is 1.4 trillion Colombian pesos. It's 12% less than the same period last year, eliminating the effect of the exchange rate. The reduction would have been up to 22%. We also want to highlight that for fourth consecutive year, Odinsa has received a ratification of a rating of AA- with a stable perspective from Fitch Ratings, ensuring positive long and short-term ratings for our ordinary bonds of 400 billion Colombian pesos that this company has issued. This valuations support our management and the strategy that has been developed by the company and become in a seal of trust for the market and for the investors, especially bearing in mind the effects that have been generated by COVID-19. Real estate business. Having mentioned the urban development business, I want to take the space to briefly mention some of the elements of the result of Pactia. It's a private capital fund where we have a relevant participation. I want to speak about the strategy that Pactia has followed to face this challenge. The net operational revenue for this quarter was 39 billion Colombian pesos, showing a drop of 25%, and the EBITDA of 21 billion Colombian pesos. These differences in results reflect the alleviations that Pactia granted their customers, especially to shopping malls, and also reflect low occupation of hotels during the mandatory preventive lockdown. Till the moment in 2019, this represented 51% of the gross revenue and approximately 40% of the net operational revenue and EBITDA. In the last months, Pactia has developed different commercial strategies focusing the sustainability and strengthening of a long-term relationship with its customers, seeking to adjust to the conditions, the current conditions. For example, in shopping malls, Gran Plaza has launched a own marketplace to drive those brands within their shopping malls. For using storage, the fund has has reached efficiencies in administration expenses thanks to the implementation of a new commercial model. These changes reflect the creativity, perseverance, and capacity of our team to look for new value generations. I have invited Nicolás Jaramillo, who is the funds manager, Pactia's fund manager. So in case we want to ask him anything, we'll have him here. I would like to end by making some references around sustainability and some final closing reflections or closing thoughts in order for us to move on to the Q&A session. In terms of sustainability, we have been working around three pillars this year. Aware investment, responsible operation, and Vanguard practices. The adequate management of these three concepts, which we are deeply committed, or even now with this current situation that we are facing as a country and as a society, is aligned with the interests of all our groups of interest, of ours. But more importantly, with the value generation for our investors in the long term, in order to follow up this commitment, we constructed a standardized methodology of externality valuations that's called a society added value or value at society. This allows us to measure the sustainability performance year after year in terms of value generation for all our groups of interest. According to our last measurement, at a broken down level, we generate 2.4 times the value that we retained in 2019. This also shows a growth of a 33% compared with the last exercise we did in 2018. The same exercise is being implemented separately in each one of the businesses of our group. Under the framework of our sustainability strategy, we're focused in building a joint strategy for climate change for a business group that covers both mitigation and the adaptation component. From one side, we're completely convinced that there's a space to create value around new products and services, innovative products and services that are associated with green and circular economies, which at the same time would contribute in a healthy transition towards a more neutral carbon economy. From another side, the exhaustive revision of the productive processes will allow us to reach the highest operational efficiencies in our companies. We've hoped to count with new goals for climate change starting 2021. Finally, just wanted to make some closing remarks, starting by saying that we maintain the optimism towards the future. The sustainability and the value of our companies based on the dynamic adaptation capacity and the way we've faced this adaptation capacity, even though there's not a clear visibility yet, our businesses have proven to be strong, have proven to be resilient, which reassures us as relevant stakeholders in infrastructure in a sector that will be the dynamizer of the economic reactivation of the different geographies, given its anti-cyclical behavior. Aligned with this, it's also important to highlight last month we identified positive signals that start showing changes in the trend towards a recovery path, such as an increase of 14% in the cement sales in Central America, the increase of a 6% in the public expense in construction in the United States, operational activity of a 90% of the 4G concessions in Colombia, traffic in road concessions that's between a 60 and a 70% of historic values, the reduction of the energy demand gap, that up to June had a negative variation of 5%, when in April we were speaking about a negative variation of 11%, preparation of the airport systems for starting the operations once again under the biosecurity protocols and the beginning of flights in certain cities. Well, maybe for the Q&A session, I'll leave this announcement that was made yesterday about restarting operations starting from the 1st of September. There has been an agreement with the Mayor's Office of Bogota, the Ministry of Health, and a public announcement that we made last night. This situation represents not just a great challenge for national governments, but also a commitment with development and execution of projects. We want to celebrate, for example, that in Colombia, a subsidy has been approved for buying 200,000 new houses. At the same time, a new program was announced of 5G infrastructure that will require investments over 20 trillion Colombian pesos. That's actually part of the ambitious program that has been announced by the national government. That's close to 100 trillion Colombian pesos and expects generating more than 1 million employments next year. In addition, at a global level, as a response to COVID-19, we have opted to implement expansive economic policies that are being applied by many of the central banks through progressive reductions of interest rates. In Colombia, the reduction has reached close to 200 basic points, and in the United States, it's between 0.25% or 0%. The reduction of the funding costs for relevant infrastructure projects and development of the regions redound in an employment generation and strengthening of competitiveness. Moreover, we have the conviction that the country, our countries, Colombia and the others, other countries we have presence, offer an adjusted return in terms of the risk level. They have a immense potential of attracting new capital, considering the liquidity excess that we have around the world right now, more specifically in those regulated and resilient sectors that, besides being interesting in terms of investment, generate a great well-being to society and a very large employment generator. So based on the social, environmental, and corporate government criteria, they stop being a sophisticated vision of the economies, vision that was sometimes seen as far away from the investor sentiment, in order to become one of the main priorities for developing the economic activity of all of the operational scales. Proof of this is that during this month, we deepened in the interest of great global investors for destining capital resources in sustainable businesses. This is a reality that ratifies the conviction that we have in our group group and in all our companies to keep leading aware investment practices, responsible operations, and implemented vanguard practices in order to strengthen the performance of our businesses. The reflections are not aside from the way that we have been doing businesses. We have, for example, technological transformation and digitalization. Nevertheless, one of the main changes that we are going through and that has led to deep reflections has to do with the role of the company in society and with the need of us to be more aware about the humanistic side of our surroundings, of the values that are being expected from us. We need to be more aware about that link between the businesses and the principles, the areas such as empathic area and solidarity area. This function will reinforce the role of our company as a relevant actor in society that, by definition, is called upon to become a development generator, progress and well-being generator. This situation is also a call of attention for us to concentrate in long-term rethinking in a cross-cutting manner the way of making business, structural values, the value of the strategy, the value of the culture, and also reaffirming that we are and will always be careful with hard metrics such as cash position, debt administration, and the way that we manage and will manage in the future risk vision, risk view. We could say that despite the situation, we trust our corporate capacities. We trust and thank the 14,000 collaborators that are part of these organizations in 18 different countries and to their talents. And we are loyal to reaffirm the higher purpose of presenting in order to generate value. through investments and operations in all the geographies where we're at, impulsing a value generation strategy for the company based and leveraged in its experience and trajectory of more than 90 years, positioning ourselves as a relevant actor today more than ever with that commitment to generate value for you for a fast, safe, powerful reactivation that can lead to positive effects in all of our groups of interest. I want to close with this. I want to send you a warm greeting to you all. Let's care for ourselves. Let's not lose the optimism. And these are times to look towards the future with optimism, with discipline, with work, with conviction in what we do. So with this, I want to give the word to Natalia, and we can open space for Q&A, the Q&A station. Any doubts or questions that you might have? Okay, thank you, Jorge. We open the space for a Q&A in the bottom part of the screen. You'll find the widget for you to ask your questions. We have received some questions. Let me just begin. We want to have more details about the rail concessions. Despite the drop of 52% of rail traffic during the quarter, we saw an expansion in the revenue and EBITDA year after years. So they wanted to know which are the traffic mitigators of the concessions that we have and how these revenues are conciliated with the indicated that the concessions with a minimum revenue guaranteed. What's the government paying for that differential and for that minimum revenue? Okay, let me greet Daniel. Just let me give this context, and afterwards I could give the word to Mauricio and Paulo. Because we do find this is a very relevant question. So let me begin from up-down approach. And we have two verticals here in concession business. We have the airports and we have the road concessions. That order of ideas, road concessions had several types of affectations during this period, and it's important for us to understand in detail how this business is constituted. So let me start by saying the following. This business right now has several particularities. Has operation and maintenance concessions. We have concessions that generate flows in dollars, cash flows in dollars and in pesos. We also have concessions in construction. And we also have concessions in restructuring and development. This portfolio is dynamic in time. And as I mentioned during this conversation, this year particularly, it incorporates a new asset. That's the Aurra Oriented Tunnel. So we need to be aware of the changes between two periods, the effect of these variables over the concession portfolio. I'm speaking about the road concession in this case. Road concessions suffered two different types of effects in this period that we are analyzing. First one was the decision of the national government during a period of time. I don't exactly remember what was the time of reestablishment. That was around May, if Mauricio or Pablo might have this more clear period by which there was no toll collection. And at the same time, there was a drop in traffic for all the projects. Now, each one of these projects that are in operation, are under operation and maintenance, has a different contractual condition. We'll be explaining this later on. But in general terms, all the concession contracts are supported in contracts that offer minimum guaranteed revenues or traffic guarantees or mechanisms such as collection differentials that recognize in some years of the project, the differences of collections that might be affected by changes in traffic. And each one of these contracts has a structural protection in order to guarantee the contractual equilibrium, some with the revenues, some others for collection differentials. So this makes that structural value of our assets for us, contractually speaking, is protected. Besides that, the effect of the management that has been led by the group is also reestablishing the effect that come from stopping constructions or the toll collection that has been decreed by the government. There's actually some negotiation tables happening with ANI, with Infrastructure Colombian Chamber, led by this team. And besides that, through the presence and support of the control entities, which makes us very optimistic about the reestablishment that has not been reflected in the financial results, not just in terms of liquidity, but in the value of all the contracts. This is a general framework in order for us to conceptualize. Just let me give the word to Mauricio so he could give more detail in terms of this. Thank you, Jorge Mario. Especially to greet you all that are with us today. Companies and our colleagues from the group. As you were explaining, I wanted to take this opportunity, and I wanted to greet Daniel also for asking this question. This question allows us to answer certain doubts that might arise around this matter. We have concessions with a minimum guaranteed revenues. This would be the two concessions in Dominican Republic and the concession out of the Café. Concessions for expected revenue, that would be Tunnel de Oriente. And practically, a concession with risk traffic, that would be Maya Vial del Meta. Going from the most simple aspect to the broadest aspects, in Maya Vial del Meta, we're in pre-construction phase. That means that we don't have access to the total source of the collection, only a portion, it's a 23%. That's what we need to keep existing or working that road corridor. And we are hoping to finish this phase in September, and has actually been discussed in similar spaces such as this. In the rest of the corridors, given that there's a minimum guaranteed revenue, the revenue is not being affected by the traffic. In the only case we have a small deviation is in Autopista del Café, because the concession was obtaining an excess. Obviously, we don't have this excess nowadays, but that was 12%. That was only 12% of the concession's revenue. So first of all, we have certain guarantees in terms of traffic. We have mechanisms of value establishment as expected revenue. It's basically to guide that traffic that we are not getting the short term. We also have a traffic guarantees, such as in projects as Pacifico 2. I didn't mention the first group because Pacifico 2, it's a fourth generation first wave, has collection differentials in years 8, 13, and 18, where we compensate the traffic curve through the traffic that was structured by ANI and the real traffic. So this is the first thing. So in traffic, we don't have that difficulty. What has been the behavior of traffic, except in the Oriente Tunnel, because of the José María Córdoba Airport has been affected? Today, traffic is close to a 30-35% of the traffic that we had before. In the rest of the corridors, including Maya Vial del Meta, traffic is between 65% and 85% compared to the traffic of 2019. So it's basically a cargo 18-wheelers, trucks, these types of traffic. So there's a resilient traffic, there's an accelerated traffic, there's some traffic guarantees, and there's also some contracts that have mitigation mechanisms. Nevertheless, there's a series of elements that exceed that problem or step outside this problem, but are included within the contract and mechanisms to mitigate all this. We decided, since from the infrastructure sector and from the National Infrastructure Agency, to construct some work tables supported by the control entities in order to establish mechanisms or common affectation elements in all the contracts without affecting the road contractor of first, second, third, or fourth generation, in order to make like a framework agreement. That conversation has advanced. We just need to close this one point, so we expect to close in the next 2 weeks, where we would sign a memorandum of understanding, where we would close those controversies and have a framework contract and looking for all the different contracts and see those mitigations that we are missing. Which are those mitigations that we're missing? First, suspension of road traffic was 68 days. For 68 days, the roads were not charging tolls or with an extension to the majority of the categories. So in the first, in the low traffic, there was first that lockdowns that this happened in order to incentivize transportation. So for this, the contracts have the necessary faculties, and the government has also the faculty to extend the periods of the concessions, even the airport concessions, so there's a similar question, without bearing in mind the limits specified by the law. In Law 18 and Law 1508, this is the first thing that we'll get from this framework agreement. How could we recognize that revenue that has not been received, indexed, and paid at the end of the concession? Overcosts of operating under this current situation in terms of biosecurity implements, and this has a small value, but more specifically in the productivity loss that has been seen in some projects. Ours, fortunately, don't have a productivity loss. As what Hemari was explaining, we maintain the works that have been operating to 100%. We've been able to mitigate the effects, and we are complying with the program. Second element. Third element, the suspension of obligations or extending the contractual obligations in order to avoid sanctions, product of this suspension, and that our projects won't be affected by this. So in summary, risks that come from a lockdown are defined in the contracts and in the law. And the conversation has been fruitful, and we're optimistic, as Jorge Mario said. In our case, this risk is also mitigated because our contracts mainly have a traffic guarantee or an expected revenue or a collection differential. Now, for the specific question about revenue expansion or the difference between revenue and traffic expansion, if Pablo could just tell us the exact figures and how is this being handled within the company, just to close with these 2 points. Pablo. Thank you. Good morning to you all. Yes, Daniela, as Mauricio said, when you have contracts that contemplate minimum guaranteed revenues or payment by the availability, such as the case of Aruba, accounting-wise, what you record is a financial asset. So the accounting revenues of that concession or a return over that financial asset that has been amortized in time. So the accounting revenue registered by those concessions is completely independent from the concession, from the traffic that the concession has. Either cars going through or there were no cars going through, the accountant revenue that's recorded is the same. So because of that main reason, and even more, that last year in June, we were not consolidating the Oriente Tunnel, but June this year, we were consolidating the Oriente Tunnel. And just for you to to bear in mind the contribution of Oriente Tamil to this failure, so to this numbers is 42 billion Colombian pesos in revenues and 20 billion Colombian pesos in EBITDA. If we delete this, there's still a growth. It's because of this, because as it was mentioned by Mauricio and Jorge Mario, the vast majority of road concessions that Odinsa has a minimum revenue guarantee. And so accounting-wise, they register according to what they have to register with IFRS, independent from this, if the traffic is being affected or not. So to answer your question, I believe this answers the question of the P&L. Now we speak about the cash flow, with which periodicity these accounts are being collected and due to this minimum revenue guaranteed. In the case of the DR, it's quarterly. In the case of Autopistas del Café, this is yearly, annually. So these revenues that we're seeing in Autopistas del Café was by collecting them in January 2021. Now, let's remember that in Autopistas del Café, as Mauricio said, it doesn't mean that there's no traffic anymore. Traffic is between a 75 and an 85%, and in those same levels, even higher, we have collections, because the composition of the traffic is more towards heavy traffic vehicles, which pay a higher toll. So collections are behaving similarly in the case of Autopista del Café, and will we still need to reach that minimum revenue required would be collected in January next year. In the case of the DR, collection is very low. What really weighs is the minimum revenue guaranteed, and this is collected quarterly, as I mentioned before. Same case happens in Aruba. It's the same revenue in terms of cash. The payment by availability by the nation is the cash that the concession gets. So just for you to be easy on this, that a cash comes with the revenue and the times, so that cash do not meet a substantial delay, more especially when the one that has a delay, as it could be at the Pizza del Café, has collections higher than an 80%. That was the complement of the answer. Okay, perfect. Let me move on with some questions regarding airports, so we could close the Odinsa chapter. I want to ask how the ANI negotiations are going, considering that airports don't have those types of clauses that we were speaking of before in rows, such as in guaranteed traffic. And if are we concerned that the agreements that we can reach only have a scope of negotiating the closure of the airports, but not after that? And I wanted to join this with a question regarding the Quito airport. They're working for a proxy. How have we seen the behavior of the traffic in the airport in the last month that has been open, and which are the additional costs that we have inquired in terms of biosecurity, biosafety? Okay, let me give a context, and maybe we could offer some detail here, because this obviously approaches a topic. As we've seen the results, it has important effects in the quarter, but it's especially important to share with you as a detail of what's happening, which is our vision. And I suggest that let's approach this in the following way. One, let's share the case of El Dorado first, and then we could speak about Keyport. In the following dimensions, yesterday there was a very important announcement, which is dialogue work with the team and Bogota Mayor's Office under the Ministry of Health to define the protocols and the way of restarting operations starting from September. This is extremely important. It's extremely valuable at the same time. Not just because this is done under an agreed framework and a respectful framework, but clearly this is established an increasing ramp of coming back to operations. This is fundamental for the country. This is fundamental for the country's economy, but obviously for us too, as a concession. I want to highlight later on, and if we have a couple of minutes, I can ask Mauricio if he can tell us a little bit about the different actions that this organization has taken around the safety of travelers in El Dorado Airport, the investments in temperature control cameras, in washing centers, in technology, in no contact technology for the checking process and for the transit process of the passengers, not just in migration, but also in luggage handling and contact, and that going through different stages of the airport as a traveler. These are very important investments that we've done, and we do this completely convinced that these types of actions are the ones that will guarantee the accelerated service. This is one element. Second element I'd like to also approach from a contractual optics, how are we approaching this conversation with the national government? If the contractual structure, as has been previously established, is different, here we have an event that we can have forecasted, a huge magnitude, and at the end, there's this decision, it's obviously, it's an understandable decision of suspending the operations, and this obviously has the implication that the concession cannot develop the object of the contract. It doesn't mean that there's a slight affectation over traffic, that's what has that typically happened. But here we have an unpredictable event where the concession cannot exercise the contractual object. And this has a discussion, it's a friendly discussion, an open discussion, but it's also a very important element towards the future in order to pre-establish eventually the economic equilibriums in these contracts. I'm going to highlight once again, none of this is being considered in the financial reports, but I just wanted to emphasize that we just don't celebrate the way that this reopening process has been happening, safe way, that this first four routes will be generated as the first step, San Andres, Leticia, and Cartagena from Bogota, and make sure that this increase, there will be a transit to a normalization in national international traffic. But let me repeat this once again. In terms of reestablishing the value of the asset and the liquidity measures that has also been discussed with our counterparty. And for the end, we could maybe speak of how the keyboard reactivation has been happening. They retook the 1st of June, but they have a different they have a concession that goes to 2047. They have a much broader spectrum than El Dorado. Well, thank you, Jorge. Let's approach each one of these points. The airport concession contracts are different. There's no first, second, third, and fourth generation. So this is the first thing. They're less. There's 18 airports that have concessions in the country, and they're concentrating about six contracts. The six contracts are not alike because some of them come from a different origin. There's no way of establishing similarities, even though they might have similar clauses. In this same sense, we've constructed from moment zero a work table on a Colombian infrastructure chamber and also representing different concessions in order to go over three topics specifically. First, liquidity measures, short-term liquidity measures, to suspend contractual obligations and or allowing liquidity mechanisms. Maybe that conversation goes further than roads. It's we hope this week or next we'll be signing this memorandum of understanding. Also, supported by the control entities that have offered the following result. What we have to pay in terms of the concession to the government, and all efforts have this in different magnitudes, has been suspended and has been prosecuted in time as an alleviation mechanism. Now, the money in the sub-accounts within the concession accounts, all concession accounts have some sub-accounts that are provisioned through the concession slide. So they have resources in moments of contingency, or maybe thinking on how to fix bottlenecks that the contract might face in certain moments. There's important resources in this case, for example, in OPAIN, there's 200 billion Colombian pesos, from which we've agreed that this 100 billion will be used in the first stage as a liquidity mechanism for the short term. So we're working on liquidity through an agreement, bilateral agreement, with the support of the control entities. And I want to mention the control entities because for us it's very important that legality control culture is completely transparent. Nevertheless, those liquidity mechanisms, internally, we've taken CSO decisions. I've said in several forums that the flexibility of that an airport has is not that large, but the space that we already took, I'll be explaining that later on. That's the first thing. Second is making a series of agreements in order to remove pressure from the airport's OPEX and obviously to care for our cash position. I'll ask Pablo maybe if he can complement some figures, if he can give you the cash data for OPAIN and the reserve accounts that we have in OPAIN for you to understand how solid we are in terms of supporting a contingency such as the one we were discussing. This is the first thing. Second is that the airports, technically for you to understand the infrastructure, but mainly airports are not closed. Airports are open. They need to be open due to a contractual disposition by law. What we have is that there's no flights and the borders are closed. So this means that we need to guarantee that the airport is operational for humanitarian flights, for anything that has to do with national security, and most importantly in airports in Dorada, that's so important. And what we've done this as an agreement with someone, suspending a series of obligations and reducing the available area that we'll have, thinking in a reactivation process. So the first work has to do with liquidity measurements in the very short term. There has to be some complete definition for this. And currently we count with necessary liquidity to keep the airport in the condition, in the current conditions for a couple more months. Second has to be with what Jorge Mario mentioned. There's two elements here. There's this event that we cannot control, and the flights and the reactivation we'll start having is under the pilot definition, even though there's commercial flights and you have to purchase your flight ticket, it's still a pilot. You need to ensure step-by-step all those security measures, the safety measures that Jorge Mario mentioned before. So that phase implies a complaint. So government and the company could reestablish this through different periods. So this is affecting the affectation due to lower revenues, so higher costs, the affectations of the OPEX that might have an adequate retribution during this 5 months, and I'm thinking on the 30th of August, indexed to some rate that are included in the contract, that the countries have in terms of in case of this type of events, and what that gives becomes in the contract extension. This complaint will start in September once we start reactivating the operation. The second stage, it's also an unpredictable event that gives space for mitigating the impact. Said in a simpler way, and excuse me for being so specific, it's been said in a different way. We are not facing a risk. We are seeing the impossibility of developing the contract due to an outer force, completely external, major force that we cannot control. So there's a legal space for the complaint. This will be happening through phases. We're going first by liquidity, but we are optimistic because we have the necessary resources, and we would start reestablishing the economic equilibrium that in both phases, without no doubt, both will be accrued for next year, for the upcoming year, 2027. But it has to do with the biosafety measures. We've started telling to our people the measures that we have been taking. The first thing that I want you to know is that this has been agreed with the Ministry of Health, Transportation, Aeronautics, and with the Bogotá's Mayor's Office. They have been agreed, harmonized, and articulated with the positions that from a health standpoint, the government has been determining. But we see this enriched with the vision of the airports that in terms of public health have been advancing the most. Singapore, Korea, certain airports in Europe, and we have a joint work table through ASI to ensure that we can have state-of-the-art in terms of biosafety measures. And we proceed as such because we believe that towards the future we won't require as much biosafety measures, but we do believe that biosafety is here to stay. An element that is not included there, but we decided to advance on, is eliminating the contact of the user of the passenger in the airport. So this means you have a virtual ticket, you have a QR code, you could organize your luggage without speaking with anyone. You can open this security filter. It's going to be automatic. You will be able to access the boarding gate. You'll be able to collect your luggage with that code. We have individual temperature measurements, but we also have this by clusters in the airport corridors. The cameras of the airport are activated to identify concentrations through heat maps and ensure that we could separate both spectrums. The airport will be used up to a 30-35% of its capacity. So in this first stage, there won't be a very large contact between the different flights that we attend. So I want to extend here because I want to send a message of trust. And I want to close this point of biosafety. Airports are not a contagious factor. Airplanes have a native airport measures in order for viruses not to progress. The air of the airplane is recirculated every 3 minutes, and the residual risk given by the population is mitigated by this safety measures. Obviously, face masks and social distancing and washing your hands. But here, we've taken all those essential measures. And in terms of the reestablishment of the operation, there's two elements that I believe that are important, because this is a frequent question that we have. Who governs the airport is the national airport. The national government is the one that took the available information to take the decision of closing the borders and stopping
flights. So in that decision, we have no participation. We have no stakes. We're just informed once they've reached that conclusion. It's the national government whom, whenever they consider right, they'll open domestic flights and international flights. In this case, given that the pandemic has an asymmetric behavior in Colombia, the Colombian government delegated this possibility in the governors to open the airports gradually. That's why us working together with the national government have opened some discussion tables with the Bogota mayor's office to discuss about how should this graduality should happen. And that's how the mayor's office did this yesterday, but we actually support this. It's the step of reopening the airport. Let me explain this forum. It's not a public opinion forum, but what is that we have discussed? There's an opening request for 25 routes in the country. 25 routes that have been requested by different parts of the country: Cartagena, Barranquilla, Leticia, Bucaramanga, Cali, Medellín, Rio Negro. From those 25 routes, 13 routes require Bogota in early stage for them to happen. Just remember that Bogota moves 60% of the national traffic, first. Second, 75% of the transit by this, where all of the passengers are collected and then redistributed to other places of destinations, is Bogota. 70% of international flights, 75% of the foreigners coming to Colombia. So meaning by this, Bogota and the interior networks is that great nodes that supplies and feeds from the rest of the cities of the country. That's why the air reactivation has to go through Bogota, and that's why the first phase has 25 routes. From those 25 routes, we'll be attending 13, that is what Jorge Mario mentioned, are three or four, the ones that have been announced already. And there's the joint work table that was created yesterday, a bit more specialized, will open the rest of the routes in order to integrate them fastly. And time horizons, that must be between 2 and 3 weeks. We hope that at the end, the middle of October, we will be reactivating those 13 routes that will give space to move around 25 to 30% of the passengers. We would still have a window in order to incorporate other routes, national territory routes. The reason of being that San Andrés and Leticia are there, and this is important for people to understand, it's a humanitarian reason. There's difficulties in these two regions of the country because the connectivity has to be done mainly by air and mainly with Bogota. So those two are there due to a humanitarian reason that we share and celebrate. Cartagena is it's an important route, the most important route in Colombia, and at the same time are the most important, the 10 most important routes in Latin America are Bogota-Cali, Bogota-Medellín, Bogota-Cartagena, and Bogota-Barranquilla. So having said that, we celebrate this, and this is the legal framework that we are working on. Alicia, maybe if you could briefly mention Keyport. How has Keyport been behaving in terms of passenger demand? We could move on to another block question that we have. Keyport, as Jorge Mario mentioned, is a very long-term contract. It's a contract that also has mitigation mechanisms in terms of stronger force. It's a contract that we remove the date of the master plan because there's a need of broadening, because this would be the passenger flow that we were expecting. It was open to the 1st of June when we opened. The first time the impact was very strong, and Obviously, there was a bottleneck of attending an unsatisfied demand. It was almost a normal traffic. Afterwards, the traffic dropped a little bit and has had volatile behavior as a measure that we haven't standardized the restrictions or the constraints or the requirements in terms of biosafety. Guayaquil is asking for certain tests, and in some destinations, they're asking for lockdowns. Good news is that starting 1st of August, government authorized to increase the capacity of the airport up to a 50%. All the airlines are offering new schedules. There's the connectivity with Europe, with the United States, and with Latin America. And in general, in this quarter, to answer concretely, we have been improving a 10% compared with 2019, but that was within our forecast. In the traffic forecast that we do, we started in 10-15%. That's what happens in the initial phase, and that grows in an accelerated manner, as what Gemari was mentioning, in terms that we are we still have the expectation to have a 50% in Quito for the end of the year, and a very similar number or figure for domestic traffic in Bogota. Total reestablishment or total normalization, that was also been asking, expect that will happen around 2022. Perfect, thank you. Let me change sectors back to what has been the impact in Napaquia, and if you have thought in investing in this fund, and how would you like to have that mix of the GLA of Napaquia for the future? Let me give the word. Nicolas, he's the manager of that fund. And just let me give a context and let me tackle this question from this angle. Yes, we have considered this investment. Fund is actually considering some. The team has been working on profitabilizing the assets. This has been very important. It has been offering effects parting from disinvestment actions of mature assets and better confirmation of the portfolio. Obviously, from all the portfolio that has a very strong industrial sector, such as warehouses, are a part of a long-term contract, hotels, sales, storage, trade, just ones that have are being more affected in the short term, and that obviously affects the short-term profitability. But I wanted to highlight the resiliency of the portfolio, close to 900,000 square meters that we have in Parkia as assets. And that resilience has been constituted by the strength and by the importance that the different sectors that have had the largest stability in terms of rents. So the answer is yes. There's disinvestment projects thought, selected disinvestment projects and assets where we are extracting value. Actually, last year, there was a very important action done in this work, and we also want to strengthen the mix of those sectors where we're at. Great part of this have a very high resilience in the long term, given that they're much more industrial and not linked, for example, to hotels. And let me give the word to Nicolas so he could speak a bit more about the net effect. Jorge Mario, good morning, and thank you all. And that has grown 2.6% in this quarter between January and December. We're expecting to have a negative estimation due to the pandemic effect by the end of the year. That's a consequence of hotel close downs and lower traffic and lower sales in shopping malls. In terms of disinvestments, we have been doing a disinvestment process the last 3 years. Till the moment, we've sold close to 480 billion Colombian pesos. This year, we've sold close to 30 billion Colombian pesos, and we'll keep going with this disinvestment project in order to reduce indebtedness and in order to offer more strength in terms of liquidity for the project. In terms of the portfolio and real estate composition, as Jorge Mario says, What we're looking for is a balance between the different real estate assets and an additional concentration in the logistics business that has a very important resilience. I believe, Natalia, that with that we answered Daniel's question, right? Perfect, Nicolas. Thank you very much. There's a question here. There's questions around Grupo Argus. With the debt and risk profiling that we've done, we've been able to reduce the cost of how much has been the reduction of the average debt, and how much have we extended the average life of this debt? So I think Alejandro can answer this question. We have no expiry days for 2021, which is a very important liquidity projection, and with a very favorable condition. But Alejandro, maybe if you could give us more detail. Thank you, Jorge, and thank you for the question. Basically, in this moment, with the June closure, as we were mentioning, the debt indebtedness for Grupo Argus is 1.74 trillion Colombian pesos. Right now, the cost of Grupo Argus debt is 5.6%. Let's remember that that same data was close to a 6.8%. Right now, it's 5.6%. Part of that has to do with that mix that we have, and that mix is 1.75 trillion Colombian pesos, where 56% is IBR, 37% is IBR, 56% is IPC, and 7% is fixed rate. As it was been mentioned by Jorge, in years 20 and 21, we have no debt expiry date. Or due date. We have a due date for 2022. That's 212 billion Colombian pesos and 124 billion Colombian pesos are capital market. So this means that from a financial flexibility point of view, we still have a very positive situation and a debt cost that's very low that obviously offers a very comfortable position for us. We've been asked if we consider charging a fee or royalty to the subsidiaries with all that work that we have been doing in terms of the active role that we have in the companies. But let me answer this. Answer is no. The answer is no. Concrete answer is no. Under the structure that we have in the group, we have a role, a strategic architect role that's very active. And not just in strategic redirection in the support of the teams, but in redefining the processes, active participation in capital structures, in expansions, in mergers and acquisitions. This is part of this holding that's done very efficiently and based on a clearly defined protocol based on the requirements of each one of the branches that, as you might know, some of them are listed, some of them are private, some of them are private, and obviously the shareholders are not the same. There's different shareholders, so this. The answer is no, basically, but in the measure that we develop a mechanism such as private capital funds, ACIA is a clear example of this scheme where there's a manager, there's a capital fund. Clearly, in these types of structures, there's mechanisms that remunerate management independent from the investment, but these are different types of investments. We have a mechanism that it rewards the future to be able to implement in certain businesses or activities or special projects where clearly there are retribution mechanisms and due to this management. But under the current scheme, I want to be very clear, our structural commitment that we have with our different branches and with its shareholder structure, it's a no.
Based on the report that Fitch had over the rating for Grupo Argos, the estimated dividends between 400 and 450 billion Colombian pesos, we've been asked if we agree on this, even though that there's no visibility yet of what will happen next for the rest of the year.
Well, I can answer this question if you want. I like to remember a little bit of the situation we faced in 2020 and bring it to a perspective of 2021. There's different things that are not as visible. But for you to have a context, in the planning that we had for cash revenues, we are speaking revenues of 529 billion Colombian pesos. The revenue that we'll have is around 407 billion Colombian pesos, but nevertheless, we need to bear in mind that from cash revenues for Grupo Argos as a holding, we also have some resources that are more relevant with time that have to do with the real estate disinvestment, where for this year we have a projection that's close to 77 billion Colombian pesos, and besides that, we have disinvestments around 53 billion Colombian pesos. So that means that between dividends, disinvestments, and extraordinary revenues, we'll have around a bit less than 540 billion Colombian pesos. This means that we already have this adjustment. From a cash flow point of view, we pay around 316 billion Colombian pesos. When we did this adjustment, we were estimating that we wouldn't have revenues from Odinsa or from Opaen due to dividends, so we removed this. But next year, this is still premature, but within the projections and conversations that we've had with the rating company, what we've been finding is that the revenues due to dividend effect will be close to those 400 billion Colombian pesos that we are seeing this year. Obviously, this depends on how the year evolves, what happens in terms of results that fortunately, as Jorge mentioned, have been showing pretty good results. And according to the initial forecast that we had, 30-35% EBITDA reduction is right now in 15%. But in general terms, we still have that financial flexibility that's so important. You can see here that we are speaking of revenues close to 540 billion Colombian pesos, dividends for 316 billion Colombian pesos. That's a superávit. That's a very high superávit. And that's why the rating companies have kept the rating, which I believe is very positive.
We have a question in terms of ROCE. Some years we spoke about 11% at a consolidated level. They wanted to ask us if this has changed or if we still have the same goal.
Let me give the numbers in detail to Alejandro. He can tell us about the evolution, obviously, and to make sure that this has a situation. The ROCE has to be kept in the short term, not long term, because that specific impact affects the moment. And I believe that despite this, there's two very important considerations that you know, to give context to this answer. And the purpose, the work route, and the strategies that we are taking in the group aim towards exceeding the capital cost and remunerating the value generated by the shareholders. We have been growing that route despite difficulties being faced by the business. So I believe the specific picture has to be seen with the understanding of what these types of shocks mean. But there's also a reduction in what of the group and the way that we weigh it. Despite the shocks and despite accounting for all the investments that we've done, which actually have a long-term horizon, the pre-COVID and post-COVID spreads have been maintained. We are not seeing them yet in the levels that we'd like, but even in the middle of a stress situation such as this one, there's a behavior where the spread of the execution in such shock is kept
reason so. We have a long-term capital insured. But I just wanted to reinforce this. We also experience risk you have that in the measure that we adjust work the expected revenues over ROCE. We have to check the ROCE and work. But all actions are following that line, and all those effects in the short term in the shock plan feel us with satisfaction because things have been working. Thank you, Jorge, and complimenting a little bit of what you just mentioned. There's several important elements that we need to bear in mind. When we look last year, our capital cost, capital cost, it was a number that was 109%. And that's where we had that ambition of having a delta of around 11%. That in a certain way could be world-class profitability levels. When we make the adjustment to capital cost, our capital cost is an 8.6%. This means that due to what has been happening, that cost has been dropping. So what we've been saying is that WACC has been dropping around 30 or 40 basis points from a capital cost point of view is something that we should bear in mind. And when we look at the profitability of our portfolio, Grupo Argos group, this is close to 7.4%. If we look at how the profitability was 1 year ago, that profitability was close to an 8.5%. This means that last year we were in that path where we were practically the same capital cost capital return, employed capital return. We're very close. The other thing that's important from a technical point of view is that given that we calculate the return to the employed capital and not the return over the invested capital, this return over capital is one that does not bear in mind the taxation benefit of the debt. If you would take into account the traditional capital cost, that WACC is even lower considering this effect. But the point here, and what we want to say here, is that effectively last year, we're practically in that path, that recovery path, having a spread over the WACC, and right now we have a devolution curve to 100 basic points, which also has been explained, but what has been happening in terms of operational revenues, and that in a certain way, a really great part of the assets have been kept stable. But we keep working on that profitability goal, and all the initiatives that we are taking are focused on keep on working with that purpose of value generation and being able to have that long-term vision and having a spread that would be close to those 150-200 points that we're speaking, basic points that we're speaking of. So the strategy keeps on being the same from a profitability point of view. Okay, to end the last question, are we considering the repurchase plan for the shares that we have spoken about, more specifically the price that our shares have right now in the stock market? Well, two comments. The assembly approved a reserve in order for the board of the company in a period of 3 years can find the most adequate moment in order to repurchase shares. Our equity relation is solid. We believe that right now the stock price is not representing the fundamental value of the company. There's a spread between these two, so there's a very strong valuation potential. But we've decided, together with the board, to give emphasis on the liquidity of the company, not just of the company, but of all our branches, given the low visibility that we have in terms of the COVID effects. It seems, and it obviously seems just a logical option from a financial standpoint, But when we integrate this with an equilibrated vision, long-term equilibrated vision, we believe that until the moment that we don't have a better visibility, we should maintain the price and flexibility. So the answer is, yeah, it's interesting. If the program is still open, if the possibility is there, and we've been seeing this. And as months go by, we might have a better visibility, but the priority is ensuring for our liquidity right now. Well, perfect. This would be the end of our video conference for the second quarter. Thank you all for your participation. Thank you all, and if there's any questions, doubts, or queries, we'll be more than open to answer them written, and you can count with all those. Thank you. Thanks for being with us.